Check this out. I'm just gonna drag this plate through the water in the pool. That's it. But look what forms.
Perfect black circles on the bottom of the pool. And it's so weird. They don't die. They just keep going right next to each other. I sped this footage up because the circles took 3 minutes to cross the pool and didn't seem to be dying out. These got sharper as they went and made it all the way across.
So cool. And look closer. You can see what's causing them.
There are two almost unnoticeable dips in the surface of the water.
Why don't they die out?
And how do these dark spots form? And why do the dips move together?
So many questions.
Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Shlohm, along with co-host, assistant host, the man behind the dials, Matt Schiltz.
Well, today we're talking to one of the most delightful people that we get to talk to.
That's right. We have Diana Cowern, also known as Physics Girl, the producer of some wonderful YouTube content, science videos that are fun, engaging, humorous, and you learn a lot. And the cool thing is she has experiments that you can do at home with simple things that anybody can reproduce. But while you're doing it, she explains to you, you know, here's the cool things you can be learning while you do this really easy to do stuff. And I also show those in my classroom. My kids love them, especially I think it's great for girls to see a young woman that they can relate to that's a reflection of what not far from them in age. And I think she's a wonderful role model for them.
Blue Dot Episode 5, Physics Girl.
I'd like to start out with your handle. How did you come across, how did you become Physics Girl? How did you adopt that?
Well, you know, I actually started out as a physics woman. Because Physics Girl was taken, which is a terrible reason to pick a YouTube handle. I thought Physics Girl kind of embodied what I wanted to do, which was, you know, obviously talk about physics, but keep that playfulness of a child, of a young girl, and like the curiosity that you typically think of as coming from kids. So I wanted Physics Girl. Plus, it sounded, you know, kind of like a superhero name. Like Physics Girl.
And so, when you first started making these videos, you were still at MIT, right?
I was living at MIT. I was not in school anymore. I was living in one of the co-ed houses, but working at Harvard at the time, actually.
And what were you working on?
I was working on low metallicity stars. So I was doing some research at the Center for Astrophysics there.
So you've actually done some astrophysics research.
I have, yeah, briefly. It was for about 4 or 5 months, and then I moved on to software engineering. But I have. I've done a small amount of astrophysics research.
And what were like some of the, maybe early on, some of the most challenging parts where you were just like, oh boy, this is hard?
Oh, my very first freshman fall physics class was probably the hardest class I took in all of my career at MIT. It was called Mechanics for Masochists, which is what the students had lovingly nicknamed it, because it was the physics that physics majors or you know, kids that wanted to challenge themselves took. So it had a ton of calculus, and it had the hardest problems that, you know, some of the professors couldn't even figure out how to solve on the first go. So it was really tough, and it kicked my butt.
And for young people that might be, you know, facing that kind of difficulty, those kind of challenges with tough academic classes, was there anything that really helped you get through that you could pass along to them?
Absolutely. I really sought out help from my professors and from the students in my class. I mean, we were fortunate enough to have passed no record in that class, which meant that you either passed or you didn't get anything on your record. You didn't get a grade. It was really about just figuring out how to work the classes there. So when I took my first test in that class, I got, I think, a C- or a D+ or something. It was just above passing. And I went to the professor and I said, you know, did I pass? What should I do? Should I drop into the easier class? And he said, well, you passed, barely, but, you know, come to my office hours, stick it out, work through the problems with me. And I did that. I stuck it out and worked with my classmates, worked with him in office hours, worked with the other TAs. And I'm so glad I did that because I felt like I started from way behind some of the other students, but I managed to somewhat catch up and ended up being one of my favorite classes.
For people who think, you know, physics is hard, boring, you know, it's one of those things where unless you really love it, you're maybe frightened of it. What is it about physics that really appeals to you? What do you love about it?
I love that it's math applied to the real world in a way that lets you take the questions you ask when you're a kid, when you're like, how does this work? How does that work? And answer those questions. That's what I love about it, is I love looking at the world around me and saying, how, you know, why is it that when I drop a spring on the surface of the water, it sinks, but when I lay it on the surface, it can float on there? What is it? It's surface tension. What is that? You know, you ask these questions, and physics allows you to answer them. I think that's amazing.
And when did you first decide or start to get an inkling that making videos about these topics was something that you really like to do?
That's a good question. I started making videos in high school. The famous dating game. But also just like family, like Christmas videos and kind of just silly videos here and there. And I liked being goofy. I felt like it was a way to let loose a little bit and show my creativity in a way that wasn't like, I sang in choirs and I played piano and these things are all kind of serious. And I like that videos let me be goofy and express myself in a more personal way. And then combining that with something I love, which is physics, was unusual, but it was something that, you know, how could, when you take two things that you really like doing and combine them, how could you not love that?
Tell us a little bit about the process that goes into making one of your physics videos. It's like one of the ones that's very successful, that gets a lot of views, that people like. What's the process like? How do you decide what the topic's going to be and how to go about producing a video? Lead us through that a little bit.
If I could predict which videos are going to be successful, I'd probably have, you know, a million subscribers.
But well, take one of the ones that people do really like, and lead us through how did you go about making it? Like, for example, I'm going to pick one that I really liked. One where you do the bouncy ball drop, where you drop the basketball and the tennis ball and the bouncy ball. Lead us through, how do you go about making a video like that?
Well, the first thing is coming up with an idea, something that you want to try. And with a video that's not an explanation, one that's got an experiment, I usually go and try it out. And that's what I did. And I took a couple of my friends and we tried at different times to balance these balls and get them to bounce straight, which was the hardest thing. And I think I almost gave up on this video because I thought this is too hard to get the three balls to balance straight up and down. And if they don't, well, they fly off on the side and people get hit in the face, which happens. So I try for a while to get an experiment that works. And then as soon as I do, I've got an idea for a video, and then from there it's just sort of researching if I don't know exactly what's going on, and then writing it into a script and doing, you know, the magic of explaining to the general public, which I haven't quite figured out 100% yet. But then it's about filming, editing, adding in the music, and then of course creating that pesky thumbnail that everyone sees when they scroll through YouTube.
A lot of people, people that understand science, aren't the best teachers of science, because the process of science comes naturally to them. You know, they know how it works. They know how to do the math. But it seems to me that you do a good job of taking people's misunderstandings and making it interesting for them and drawing them in. Could you talk just a little bit about that from an educational standpoint, or why you think your videos are effective as tools to get people interested in science?
Sure. Well, I think that part of the problem for scientists is that these simple, basic concepts, a lot of the foundations of what they're working on, are things they haven't studied for years and years. I mean, you take like your basic bio class or your basic physics class, and sure, you build upon that, and that's your foundation. But when you go back and ask the more fundamental questions that don't need complex mathematics and don't need all these advanced courses to understand, you kind of forget the basics. Like I tutor now, or I have tutored in the last few years, and there's so many formulas and concepts I just didn't remember. And I was like, I thought I could teach algebra too, no problem. But there are so many little things that you forget. And I think that is one of the problems for scientists, is that they haven't looked back at these basics for a long time. Or if there's anything they kind of glazed by and didn't quite understand, they never returned to it. So you forget how to use the basic language and what the basic concepts are, and you get stuck more in the mindset of these very specific scientific fields, which have their own jargon and have their own equations and so forth.
Why do you think children start out with this natural curiosity about nature and science and asking those childlike questions, but then usually in the high school years get turned away from it to where they don't want to pursue the sciences the way you did?
Well, I think it's a basic part of human nature to be curious. If you don't explore your world, you're never going to learn. You're never going to figure out what things hurt you, what things help you. It's just a way of surviving. And curiosity, I mean, it's part of human survival, but I think it's a wonderful part that I'm happy to have. And I think being childish isn't cool when you get to middle school, when you get to high school. It's like, you know, you want to be mature and you want to be cool. I think the best popular kids are the ones that are goofy and curious, as well as being seen as cool. And that's what I aspired to. I was never cool, but but that's what I aspired to, was to keep, you know, my passion for all the things I liked, like music and science and math, as well as being seen as popular. Never got there, but it's what I aspired to. And I guess I kept that half of it. I kept up the nerdy curiosity and music and all the things that I liked when I was a kid.
When did your initial YouTube channel when did you get a big break where, you know, now you're working with PBS Digital Studios, right?
I am, yeah. I signed with PBS.
How did that come about?
That came about when I won the Flame Challenge, which is actually happening again in a couple weeks. So Alan Alda's Flame Challenge is a challenge to scientists to put out a video answering a science question for fifth graders. And I did that back last May, or was it, gosh, it's 2 years ago. I did that about a year and a half ago in May, and I won the Flame Challenge answering the question, what is color? And once I won that, there are a few, you know, articles that went out, and that's when someone from PBS reached out to me and got interested in the channel. That's when I kind of got connected with some of the other YouTube channels like Minute Physics and Veritasium, and started talking to them and getting advice from them, from the big shots. And it kind of all stemmed from the Flame Challenge.
What do you think about the phenomenon on YouTube that's going on right now? There are so many interesting channels that have really cool intellectual content to them. They're not cat videos. They're not just entertainment. There's really cool education things going on there. What do you think of all that?
I think it's wonderful. I think it's sort of the way for the internet to do things like Bill Nye the Science Guy or like Cosmos or educational channels that were really popular when there was no digital media. So now that so much more of what people consume is on the internet, that stuff is starting to sprout up, and I think it's great. I'm so excited for it. I always search around for, you know, like world history channels or cooking channels or things that are sort of outside of my typical realm of interest, but there's so much out there now of really high quality that it's exciting for someone like me who loves consuming these different categories, and they're just getting better and better. The quality is just improving.
When you watch some of these other videos, what are some of the things that you notice, no matter what the content is? What is it that makes an effective video that's fun to watch and engaging? What are some of the main elements, you think?
For me, and it could just be the way that I think, but for me, a really effective video asks a specific question, and a good question, and says, you know, why does this happen, or why did this happen in history, or who was this person, or, you know, just asks a really good question and then goes about answering it well. That's what, for me, makes an effective video, because it's with that question that kind of grabs me in, and I'm like, okay, well, I want to know the answer to that, too. It's almost like I own the question, and that's how I really learn. That's how I get engaged.
Now, you've been doing the PBS Digital Studios videos for a little while now. Tell us about some of the ones you think are your favorites.
Well, I've been doing it for about 6 months, I'd say. I really enjoyed making a video recently about whether MRIs are safe and about the physics of MRIs. I like that one because it's something that I had learned when I first started studying physics, because I took a psychology class at the same time where they had us be patients in some MRI studies. So I got my brain scanned while I was learning the basic physics of the machine doing the scanning. And I thought that was such a cool mesh of different topics, different fields. And so I wanted to revisit that and talk about the physics of MRIs.
You're listening to Blue Dot. We're talking to Diana Cowern, a.k.a. Physics Girl. She's a science communicator and a YouTube phenomenon. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Blue Dot. I'm Matt Schiltz along with Dave Shalom. We're talking with Physics Girl, a.k.a. Diana Cowern. She's a science communicator and a YouTube sensation.
Let's talk about you a little bit as a person. When you're, you know, people always tend to think that you're Physics Girl, so all you do is physics. I'm pretty sure you have a life of all kinds of varied interests when you're not making physics videos. If you could meet any person and spend a day with them, okay, anybody, could be a person from the past, the present, anyone at all, who would that be?
I think right now I'm on a Lucille Ball kick. I feel like she would be such a fun person to spend the day with. She was just a pioneer in her field, and I find that really inspirational. And she's so funny. I mean, I think spending a day with her would just be eye-opening as far as being a strong woman in a field that didn't have many women, and also just fun, just like, you know, interesting to see what her personality is like.
And it was her studio, after all, that brought us Star Trek.
I didn't even know that.
Yes, Desi Lu Studios was the original. That's where Star Trek was brought into the world.
I like her even more.
Yeah, Lucy was, and she was quite a businesswoman. What would be advice you would give to young people, especially young women, that might be interested in pursuing a career in the STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, mathematics? What kind of advice would you give them to encourage them? Because for a lot of young ladies, something happens along the way that turns them off. What would be some advice to keep them turned on?
You know, it's so hard to find the magic words that's going to inspire each individual girl. But for me, it was when my teachers told me that girls who do physics are super cool, that like it's uncommon to find women in math and computer science and physics. So when there are girls, they're special, and aim for that. You know, don't let someone who tells you it's a field not for women, or it's too nerdy, or it's a boys' game or a boys' field. Don't let those discourage you, because you know I'm doing it. There are thousands of women in this country doing incredible technology stuff, and there are astronomers and astronauts who are women. They're just all these incredible women doing amazing things, and they're cool.
I have a quick question, Diana. Hi.
Hi.
You know, your name's Physics Girl. The media seems to, on one hand, really appreciate your science communication aptitude, clearly, and people and viewers do. But on one hand, the media sort of focuses like, hey, she's a girl, she's young. You know, is that good? Is that bad? Is that annoying?
I think that if it's something that can get my voice to the right audience, which is young girls, I really do want to reach young girls and say there are women out there doing science. You wouldn't be alone as a woman in science, so go for it. On the other hand, I don't want to focus on that. And I know people do ask me about it a lot, and I think it has had an impact on how my experience was doing physics. So it's not an unfair question, but when I talk about science, when I do my videos, I do it as a physicist interested in physics. And I hope that's, you know, my experience as a woman in physics and as a woman in science communication is something separate than my actually doing the science communicating and doing the science. And I hope that comes across.
And it does. And I would say that is it's an interesting question. And it's something that you don't, guys wouldn't get asked that.
Exactly. And well, like, you wouldn't be physics boy because you'd just be physics person.
Physics,
you know?
Whatever.
Well, I mean, there's Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Yeah.
There's actually a physics, there's an experiment boy who's quite popular in France. I think that because being a woman in physics is unusual, people focus on the fact that I have girl in my name. But there are, you know, Bill Nye the Science Guy is a huge example. You wouldn't call a girl, you know, the science guy. So, I could have said physics person, but that wouldn't have quite the same ring to it.
Well, following on that a little bit, you know, anytime you're someone who represents an underrepresented part of a field, people sort of assign you this. It's like you're sort of almost asked to speak for all women in physics or something like that. And so that's sort of where that question came from. It's just I wonder if that is like, you know, that's not what you bargained for or something like that.
No, I think that I appreciate that people ask. I appreciate that people are not ignoring the fact that there are fewer women than men in physics and in some of these other STEM fields. And since that has happened, you know, since people ask me a lot about that experience, I've started asking around to some of the female professors that I know or the female graduate students that I know and ask what their experience has been like, because I can't speak for every woman, but now that I do get asked this question, I try more to be aware of what the experience is like, you know, for a graduate student or a professor. I haven't been in that position as a physicist. I only did my undergraduate degree in physics. So I try to be aware of what it's like for other women, because I know the experience is different for everyone.
People like you and me that are brought up where they do experience the outdoors and get a love of being out in nature, that tends to foster that scientific curiosity. Do you think there's anything to that?
Yeah, I do. I think when you have to go outside and, you know, your parents say, go play outside, kids, you have to kind of make your own fun. And in that discovery while you're playing. You come up with, you know, you use your creative mind and you come up with things to do and things to try. And I think you're forced to be a little more innovative than, you know, if you sit inside and just consume, meaning just watching videos or playing video games or you know, even just playing, you know, games over and over. I think it puts you in a closed framework. And when you get outside, you're sort of, the limits are gone.
And the other thing that strikes me about, and I didn't really know this about you too much, but it reminds me so much of my sister growing up, is you definitely are a beach person.
Oh, so much.
I grew up in Malibu. And
I see.
My sister was a surfer. She taught me to surf. She taught me how to take a skiff out into the ocean. And she also taught me just to really be interested in nature and science and gave me a pair of binoculars and said, go out on the deck and look at the stars with the binoculars. You'll be amazed at what you can see. And,
yeah.
And things like the phosphorescent plankton. I can remember that in Southern California when the waves would be breaking and lighting up like, you know, these phosphorescent tubes from the plankton.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I've never experienced it since I've been here. But
it's so beautiful.
I've been looking out. And see, these are the things where I would, you know, when you're outside, when you're at the beach, you're staring at maybe a campfire and you're, you know, wondering about why does it burn red sometimes and yellow other times. And then you get the opportunity to look at the stars and ask about those, and you ask why the waves crash in period. There's just so many questions you can ask.
And it's being outdoors and experiencing those beautiful things that I think is what sparks, at least it did for me, sparks my interest. And I always tell people, just because I'm a physics person, physics dude, just because I understand physics, when I look at a sunset, you know, sure, I understand the physics of it and why those colors are there. But it makes it more beautiful because I understand it, not because I'm clinically looking at, okay, well, those wavelengths are 6,000 nanometers and that's why they're red or whatever.
Right.
I just have that deeper appreciation and find it all the more beautiful because of it. And I think that's the joy of, that's to me the joy of physics, because physics really is about understanding nature on the most fundamental level.
I absolutely agree.
And on that note.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Physics Girl, thanks for being on Blue Dot with us.
Thank you for having me.
Diana Cowher, the Physics Girl. You can check her out on YouTube and PBS Digital Studios. You've been listening to Blue Dot, a production of North State Public Radio. You can check us out at mynspr.org or follow us on Twitter at NSPR News or me at Dave Shlom. And I am Dave Shlom, reminding you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.